Welcome to Minority Corner. With an Eke.
And James. Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues.
Only it's more black. Gay.
And ladylike. Come on, be my baby tonight.
Come on, be my baby tonight. Episode 69. Come on, be my baby tonight. Yeah. This week on Minority Corner,
what are you talking about?
Well, Eneke, in honor of us being at episode 69,
the sexiest of numbers.
Yes, I thought I would do 69 sex tips. How he can get his, how his can get his, how she can get his, and how her can get her, and how they can get they.
Are you listing all 69?
We're already through the first six.
Oh! Well, yeah. I am excited.
No, I'm kidding. What I'm really talking about.
Yeah, okay. Oh.
I am talking about something somewhat as sexy, but kind of also not as sexy, just because what it really means. But it does involve sexy black British actors.
Oh.
But then it also is talking about, is the grass really greener on the other side in the UK for non-white actors?
You just threw me a curve-ass ball. I don't know where I am.
Took you on a ride. Took you on a ride.
What?
Yeah. Took you on an adventure. Because it's still in honor of Black History Month.
It's true.
We're going to shed a light onto what's going on across the pond, Governor.
You mean in, like, at the West End?
Ugh.
Dancing and
with those
Whitney Houston
body rolls? No, we already talked about that.
Okay.
So we'll leave that alone. Episode 63, if you'd like to revisit my views on the West End.
If you're curious.
Yeah, that's already there.
Oh.
Basically, by the end of the episode, we will have discovered and figured out, should James move across the pond as a gay black actor?
Oh, I'm excited. But before that, we're going to go to my corner. And my corner, you know what? New York Fashion Week just wrapped up, and I want to celebrate some designers that are, like, actually doing some radical shit on the runway.
Oh, okay. Radicalize your runway.
Exactly.
And some tips of how you can do it in your own bedroom.
Sure. If you want to stomp the runway down your hallway, utilize some of these tips that the New York Fashion Week are demonstrating, because, you know, fashion industry is normally super sizist, super ageist, super ableist, super white.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see and cherish some designers that you might really want to spend your money on because they're doing some awesome things.
I am into it. So come on, be my baby tonight in episode 69.
Ooh, ow! Ooh,
ah. Getting it. She getting it. He getting it. They getting it. I don't know why I'm still singing this version.
I didn't know where to jump in on that.
And what do you want?
That double dutch was going way too fast for me.
You have 69 opportunities. Ooh, I said it.
We are at another 69, episode.
69. Yep. Aneka, is there a song about 69ing?
I'm sure there is. There's the 69 Boys.
Do you remember
the 69 Boys?
Do I remember the 69 Boys? Aneka, fun fact about James Arthur.
Yes.
One of my first, my debut or my debois onto stage. Yes, my French debois. I was in the fifth grade. I was a part of a dance group called Nine on Time.
This sounds very reminiscent of a Beyonce Giselle Knowles.
This
with
is
her
I
girl's time.
And that's actually funny you should mention that, because actually this is exactly what that was. Because a friend of mine, she had gotten, like, there were eight ladies who were like, we want to start a dance group. They're like, but we want to do the Tootsie Roll. By the 69 Boys. And they're like, we need a lead guy to lip sync the words. James, are you up for it? And I was like,
how old were you?
I was like in the fifth grade. So
this
like 10.
Yes. You're already on the playground being spotted.
They were like, we need that guy.
Yeah.
And I mean, I hadn't really danced that much. Like, my brother used to say that I couldn't dance. And, you know, he's like, you can't do the same. He's like, you don't know how to do the same moves over and over again.
Here we go.
And so that, like, and so the, I was picked to be in Nine on Time. Now, the original momager of Nine on Time, she was kind of not that great. And my mom was like, she wasn't good with the choreography. She wasn't good with like the formations. And my mom got wind that this was happening. And
so
my
mom was
like, exactly.
Yeah.
Sydney was like, why don't you have rehearsals over at our house? And my mom took over. She was like, because my mom was like a former cheerleading coach and like
Mom is a performer.
She's a performer. So my mom got these girls into shape. They thought they'd only be having rehearsal every once in a while. No, my mom was like, rehearsal is here. It is at this time.
Okay.
She had us drilling the routine, getting us under formations. She was like, smile.
Oh my god. She was putting you guys to work.
She did. And I was, you know, I was in the front. And can I and here's the thing. Yeah. We had so many rehearsals, and the song we did was the Tootsie Roll. And if you guys remember, some of the lyrics are to the left, to the left, to the right, to the right. So that's the choreography we also did, and these girls could not get it right.
It's literally telling you what to do.
Still couldn't get it. Still
because
couldn't
even
get
it's
it.
All like, dip, baby, dip.
Told you
dip,
what to do.
Baby, dip.
Told you what to do. But I'll tell you that a star was born that day.
Oh, that's when you got the bug? Is that the moment it happened?
It was pretty much, I sold that number, I will say that, because I got to lipstick all the words. And we all had, like, you know, jerseys were really big back then.
Oh, so they were huge.
My Orlando, like, jersey.
Magic.
And, like, yes, it was the Orlando Magic.
This is amazing.
I had my little Orlando hat, my big jean shorts.
Oh, yeah, jeans.
No, they were my jean shorts.
Jorts? You were sporting some jorts.
No, they were jean shorts.
That's a jort.
Really? No, I thought those were just, I thought that was something.
You have never heard of jorts?
Well, I've heard of it, but I thought that was a thing that like silly girls wore, like jeggings
or
something.
No, jorts are jean shorts.
Oh.
I like how I could literally see the wheels turning in your brain when you were like, jean shorts. What? I didn't wear jorts.
Wow. mind blown. Okay, well, there you have it. I was wearing my jorts performing in my new dance group, Nine on Time, to 69 Boys, which were huge.
They were huge, and I'm glad.
Wait, did they also do Space Jam, or was that the Quad City DJs? Like, who did which?
I think Quad City DJs did Space Jam and The Train.
Okay, well, also.
And 69 Boys did Tootsie Roll.
Oh, okay. Are we getting all these
who
groups
did
confused?
Butterfly? Was Butterfly one? No, Butterfly was the dance that was like the Tootsie Roll.
See, I got confused. Which one came first, the chicken or the egg? No one will know.
No one will know. It's, you know, it's the mysteries of time.
Only time will tell. there may be a song. If you guys know any 69 songs about 69ing, tweet us, twat at us. We want to know them.
Speaking of that time period and people, I don't know why I'm bringing this up, but it just seems relevant. There was a man who posed as Cisco during New York Fashion Week. He looked nothing like Cisco. He was basically just a black man with bleached hair and terrible clothing. And everybody believed him because Cisco hasn't been around in that long. Nobody knows what the fuck he looks like. So they're like, all right, come on in, Cisco.
Oh, Cisco.
Get front seat at this fashion show.
That's a great idea. I must start. Well, guess who's going back to blonde?
I know.
Like college all over again for myself. Because I will get first class, I'll get VIP, no lines for me. Just walking through. I'm Cisco, thank you. And I was that thong.
You need a yellow puffy vest, you need some silver wraparound glasses.
And some guys to look like Drew Hill.
Just following you, some regular ass dudes following you around with some sleeveless gloves or fingerless gloves.
Fingerless gloves, sleeveless gloves will work. Also sleeveless. Cisco did not like a sleeve.
Cisco did not like a sleeve.
Can't be mad at him for it because I'm not a big fan of sleeves either. There was a period of time where I was cutting off all my sleeves.
I remember this period. You were also a big fan of vests at that time period too.
It was, you know, you know, it's my American right
to bear your fucking arms.
To bear these arms, ladies and gentlemen.
Those guns should not be hidden from the world.
My right. And okay, can we transition into, first of all, well, wait a minute. Do we want to talk about party lines?
Yeah. This is, you know what? This is called flashback to the 90s.
This is somehow, because we from 69 to the 90s.
Somehow we ended up into the 90s.
Was not on our agenda today, but here we are. Do y'all remember party lines? We were talking about party lines because Aneke and I, we have a very important special guest who's going to be on our bonus episode for
bonus
next month.
Episode coming up during the fun drive, maximum fun drive.
Maximum fun drive is coming up next month, so we'll have an exclusive episode just for those listeners who are, I guess, maximum fun members or whatnot. It's like $5 to be a maximum fun network member.
Yeah, we'll have more information. Coming up.
We clearly have not done our research on this, but it's coming.
It's coming, y'all.
We just know we have to produce. All we know is we got to produce an episode. So we're going to be having one of the writers of.
You're just going to spoil it right now? Keep
oh,
some
wait,
tension.
Never mind. Okay, fair enough. But just something is coming up, and we need to figure out how we're going to do a conference call for one of our guests. And Aneke was like, we need a party line.
We do. Party lines are basically. I would say, I'm going to say party lines are the entry point to social media. Because first you got a party line where everybody jumped onto a call and it was terrible. Then you got a chat room.
Wait, why was it terrible?
Because everybody, well, first of all, if you listen to this podcast, you and I talking to each other is like...
It's already a lot. Yeah. And then, because a party line, you could add up to 8 people, which why would you... It sounds cute because you're like, all of us can talk at the same time.
It's a party.
Woo! It's a disaster.
It's a collision. That's what it fucking is.
It's a lot of work, too, because Jaleesha's got to call Joey. Joey's got to call Antoine. Antoine's got to call Stacey. Stacey called Becky. And then you've got 8 people on the line. All talking
and everybody's
at once.
Talking at the same goddamn time.
Mm-mm, it was terrible. And then if one person got off, someone's like, you know, Joey's like, I gotta go. I gotta go to dinner. And then, but you're still on Joey's home line. So Joey's dad gets on and there's like 7 middle schoolers still terrible. On the phone line. And Joey's dad's like, what the fuck is going on? I didn't make a phone call. And they're talking about Britney Spears and blowjobs.
I never talked about that in the 7th grade.
But that's pretty much all what junior high schoolers were talking about. Just Britney Spears and blowjobs.
You talked about Britney Spears and blowjobs and that.
And maybe like algebra, like, oh, it's so hard. And then what else was I going to talk about? And
that.
Britney Spears and blowjobs.
Once again, the budding of a young superstar right there, just over the party line.
Yeah, all over the party line. So if you guys have any suggestions that are not party lines, we're into it.
It's true, but let me say my theory real quick.
Party lines to chat lines.
Party line, and then everybody got into the chat room, and then everybody got onto MySpace, and then Facebook, and then...
Oh, wait, but Friendster was
Friendster
before.
Friendster first.
Oh, where does LiveJournal fit into this? I thought that was just private.
That's kind of more of like blogging. That's like the through line to blogging. Like, I feel like social media started with a party line. You know, that's just kind of my theory.
I'm into it. Okay. I agree with you.
All right, cool.
That's also how a star was born, was through instant messenger away messages.
Because
my kiss sledding star was born through instant away messenger. Back in college, I don't know if you remember this, but I had just come out and I was like, damn, there's so many people I want to make out with. And someone was like, you should write a list. And then someone was like, you should post that as your away messenger message. And so there it was. And I made out with 46 people in a matter of 3 months.
Because
people were like, are you on the list? I remember one of our friends, I will not name him. He was quite upset that he was not on the list.
I remember this. I remember all of this, and
you
also,
might have been on that list. And
I was not on the list.
Got you. Got you.
I don't think so.
Got
it was in a play.
Got you, pal. No one can resist these lips. A star is born.
I also like to just say, I'm still caught up on this Britney Spears and blowjobs conversation
because
I don't even know how they like intersect. How you would bring it? How you would tie it into conversations?
Because you would be like, teehee. Did you see Britney's new music video? Sometimes she was wearing all white. Teehee. Blowjobs.
What?
It's literally the conversation.
Worst.
And then probably like algebra's the worst, isn't it? And that's literally the conversations of my teenage dream heart. That's what was going
on.
That's
perfect. That's good.
I want to just break in early, give some shout outs to some Corner Kids. There's some really good conversations that are happening in the Corner Kids Playground, found that on Facebook.
If you guys haven't joined, join, because there's some, it's like, it's, I love dipping in there, and it's such a great community.
Absolutely. I just want to give a shout out to DNC. He wanted some advice about attacking racism and femphobia on dating apps. And for those of you who maybe don't use, you know, gay dating apps because you're not gay, you still
That's
might
me.
Find... okay. Well, you still... I don't think you're using any dating apps.
I'm married.
Like, are there married apps where it's like...
Probably for some swangers.
Or you maybe... Well, I mean, like, you get to, like, just trade pictures with just you and your boo.
That's... No, I wouldn't care about that. I'd be like, why are you sending me this?
And he's, like, flirting with you. He's like, hey, you know, just spice it up.
I don't know. After 6.5 years, you're kind of like, I see your face.
Okay.
In every room. It's still cute.
I still see it. But I don't need to be blowing up my phone about it. But Dancy, it was just, and we're not going to go into big details about this because there's already great conversation about it happening. So you guys can chime in if you have advice or ideas. And we've talked about this, but Dancy has noticed that, you know, how do you combat things like racism and femphobia on these dating apps, you know, with these like faceless folks, and these folks who are like touting like no black guys, or I'm not racist, it's just a preference, or no femmes, yada, yada, yada.
We've definitely talked about this in the past, and this is, like, so disgusting to me that people, like, are still 2016 posting this shit, but...
Oh, it's 2017, sweetheart.
Oh, see? I mean...
But you're still upset that it was happening then.
Also, it is also February, so cut me some slack. We are newly into 2017.
Fair enough. Circle back to June if you're like, well, listen, it is the year 2013, and this should not be happening.
I think anything with the title of 2000 is so futuristic that we need to cut this shit out.
True. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I will say this, that like, you know, I've been on, like, I've not seen a lot, at least in New York, there's like no one, that shit, no one's doing that shit here on these apps and stuff. They've got their shit together. So good job, New York. Get That's it good. Together, the rest of you.
I mean, when I was on like OkCupid way back in ancient times, I don't remember seeing too many things, but at the same time, I don't know if I was looking at profiles that would have had, you know, things like that said on there. I don't know. If you were saying shit like that, first of all, you're probably not listening to this podcast.
Well, no, but I think Dan's question is more so like, well, fuck the people who are saying it. Like, how do you combat it? Like, what do you do when you see it?
I don't report it. You know? Can you report shit?
I think you can. And I guess it's like, just don't message that person. I don't really have like any, cause I don't really see it, I guess. There are probably some fun ways that you could troll them. If you're like feeling saucy on a Friday night, you could like be like, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Or I'm sure there's some fun turn of phrase that you could write, or like way to get that troll elected or something.
I don't know. It's like, I guess it angers me so much that I like, don't even go into like being cutesy funny about it. I just want, like...
Would you just be like, fuck you, you're an asshole.
Yeah, basically.
You know what? I'm going to say, Aneke is not one to do that very often, but if she's saying this, then this is the truth. And
Because it's
say,
so ignorant, James. It is, like, so ignorant to me. Mm-hmm. Like, if somebody is saying, like, oh, I don't want this type of person, but I'm not racist or I'm not phobic in whatever way, then... You are delusional about yourself, you know?
And it's especially always really jarring to me to see it, especially, like, on, like, queer dating apps and spaces, because, like, not saying, like, we don't have the space. Like, y'all, we can't afford to be discriminatory because we are just trying to survive, and we need strength and unity in numbers. Like, we are within our own communities so much stronger together, and it's like... We still have so much more room to go, and they're still trying to take our rights away that we can't be nitpicking at each other because, like, you know, and again, I've said this before, it's like those femme folks are the reason why you know, people who are quote-unquote past are able to have all the rights that you do have.
Right. Like, I don't know. It just, like, irritates me so much that this is the reason why we have intersectionalism and why we need to talk about it more. Because a lot of this shit happens within each of several communities. Like, for this is separate, but I've been around groups of Black people who have made fun of Asian people. Like, don't do that shit. Like, this is... I don't know. And putting that on your profile is such a proclamation.
It's like a flag. Like, it's like a flag that, like, I am a racist or a phobic, whatever.
You might as well put, like, the Confederate flag up there. And if you're the type of person that recoils from the Confederate flag, yet you have, like, no femmes, no Asians, or whatever on your fucking profile, then you need to re-examine what's going on in your brain.
Absolutely. You do. So that conversation is still happening, but I applaud, I don't know, like, you know, things, there's some great conversations that are happening on the corner.
Oh, I have a way that we can combat it.
You could, like, send them a Confederate flag. Like, you send them a message.
You could send them a Confederate flag and be like, you need this, bitch. But, if you have a friend, I think it's more, we all have someone in our circles that dips a toe into the nasty pond from time to time. Mm-hmm. And I think if we make it clear that we don't tolerate that behavior, it chips away at it. So if somebody walks by and, like, you know, a certain type of person walks by and your friend goes, ew, be like, why? Why? Yeah. You know? Because then that person will then feel embarrassed for feeling that way and hopefully reexamine it. So I think we need to start keeping our loved ones and people who we surround ourselves with in check.
Very true. Can I quote, we met this guy, I think I sent you this article, Peter Kim.
Oh, yes!
He, Queerity did this article about him talking about the same exact thing. And Peter Kim, he's a comedian. We met him when we were down at the Chicago Podcasting Festival. And
he was in
Second City. I think he, like, left because of some racist shit that was happening or whatnot that he, like, talks about but doesn't really talk about. But he talked to us about it backstage, inside gossip.
Ooh. I don't know if we should be putting that out on the podcast.
He just says that he can't talk about it, but he didn't say that we can't talk about it.
Okay,
He said, you know, if your dating profile says no Asians, then you're a trash gay. He said, idiots who say no Asians are the same trash gays who say no fats, no femmes, mask only, and other basic grinder shit like that. And then he usually goes, it's usually white gays, surprise, that are enslaved to the heteronormative notions of shaming femininity and praising masculinity. And so it's like, it's still sort of, you know, still being enslaved to this sort of dominant bullshit culture. So break free. Do what Ariana Grande said and break free.
I mean, even Katy Perry is trying to be woke now with her Chain to the Rhythm song. So if you're behind Katy Perry, then you need to catch up.
Well, I was there with her at election night and I saw the...
Stop it!
I was breathing the same air. I was breathing the same air as her on that election night. It was there. And I saw she had pen and paper in her hand. She's like, I need to write this song, y'all. And
did you give her some lyrics?
I was holding up some chains and banging on some drums. And she was like, I see you.
Chain to the Rhythm!
And a star was born.
Oh my God. This episode is called The Birth of James.
Okay. There was one last one that I just gonna briefly touch on. Jade R was having some issues with a coworker, pretty much saying about the gist of it was about reverse sexism. And before I could even hop on, see, the bat signal of the Corner Kids is so dope. Because before I could even hop on and just say, like, reverse sexism isn't a thing, you Corner Kids already beat me to it.
Oh, look at you, Corner Kids.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Just not a thing. Like, if someone's like...
It's not.
Someone's like,
anytime you have the power, it's not the thing that goes... Like, if you have the power in society because of your race, and then you get discriminated against, it's not racism.
Yeah. It's not. The sexism against men just really gets me because it's just like, what?
I know. There's prejudice, there's bias, there's awful things happening to individuals, but it's like, not sexism.
But it's like, just even then, like women being prejudiced against a man, like, it's just like, no offense. Like, I just don't, what does that do? Like, it doesn't, Like, your day, you get to go back to your privileged life and continue to be empowered and whatnot. Like, you know, the same thing of like, oh, those black people were prejudiced against me, and you get to continue going on with your privileged life. So, okay, well, on that note, thanks, Corner Kids, and let's get up into some corners. Let's talk about the 69 boys and 69 tips. No, I'm just kidding.
I don't know. The way you're building it up, it sounds super exciting.
No.
I'm ready to get sexy and British.
We are definitely getting British, and we're going to discover, should James, as a black gay actor, move to the UK? Is there work over there for him? What's going on in the UK? Is the grass greener?
Ooh, let's find out.
Here we go. Are we in it?
Yeah, I'm recording. I'm ready. I just didn't know. You sounded like you were doing something exciting, and I didn't want to be like rude by being like, "Hey, James."
There wasn't.
Are you singing a song?
Zach, can I sing along?
Can I sing too?
So I was watching The Imitation Game this past weekend.
I just watched that recently too.
This is great because I'm curious. When I was watching it, it's really hard for me right now. I'll be honest with everybody. It's really hard for me right now to watch movies that have it's damn near impossible for me to watch media that is predominantly white.
Like, I just can't feel this way only with Benedict Cumberbatch.
It's just in general, like, I can't donate my time to, like, I'll watch The Walking Dead, hella black folks up in there. I've been rewatching Happy Endings again. There's at least one, Damon Wayans Jr. is in it.
He's like, up in that mix.
He's all up in it. And, you know, and so, but then I was like, okay, but at least there, it's about, like, a real life gay person who essentially built the first computer, right?
Yes.
And so it was really hard. And so I decided to go ahead and I was going to watch this thing just because it's also based on a true story. And right now I am a sucker for some based on a true story. I am just like,
it's Oscar season.
I'm into it.
Yeah.
I love my two stories. I will say the only reason why I allowed myself to watch The Imitation Game, because I was like, I'll watch this, but I'm going to watch Tangerine after it. Have you seen Tangerine?
Oh, I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
Everybody, it's on Netflix. Don't run, don't walk, don't crawl, don't fly. Just get to it.
Just click it.
Just click it. Actually, that's all you have to do. You don't need to do all the other stuff.
Just click Tangerine.
That's a little excessive, y'all. Just click it. Just type it in. It's amazing. It's like this transgender adventure dark comedy about prostitutes in LA, and it's so dope.
I've heard good things. I really want to see it.
So good. So, yeah. So, as you know, Aneke, The Imitation Game, based on a true story. Yes. And it's about this real-life gay genius, Alan Turing.
Turing. Because there's a Turing test.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So, he pretty much during World War II, he helped MI6 defeat the Nazis by cracking the Nazis' Enigma code. Mm-hmm. And he was like a British secret for like 50 years because they were like, we can't let anybody know about this. Because they also essentially, like, spoiler alert, got to decide who lived and died every day. Because if the Germans knew that they had cracked their case, they would have, or their code,
they would change it immediately, right?
So, yeah, so it was this, you know, big secret or whatnot. And I think it's also shitty because he ends up killing himself because in the 1950s, it was still illegal in the UK to be gay. And they had found out that he was like, you know, he was gay, and they put him on, they made him do hormone therapy or go to, his options were go to jail or do hormone therapy. And so
chemical castration.
Yeah. And so he chose that and then a year later killed himself. So already at that note, the UK grass is already not so greener on the other side.
Like, what you doing, UK? I feel what like you doing?
The UK often tries to tout that they are like they've got the human rights game on point over the US. Like, I feel like I get that feeling sometimes when I go over to the UK.
I do too, but they have as many problems as we do.
And it's time to shine a little bit of a light onto that. So this month in Black History Month, we're shining a light onto the... we're exposing you, the UK.
This is called What You Doing, UK.
What You Doing, UK. And no, here's the thing. Here's why I started doing this investigation into, you're like, James, where is this going? Where do the black people come involved? And that's exactly, that's exactly it. Because as I was watching the movie about 30 minutes in, and there has this scene where they're evacuating people because they're being bombed. I was, you know how I like to look at the background extras. You know how I like to look.
You do. You love yourself just checking it out.
It's kind of like what I do. And I tell you this, it's something about myself. The background extras will allow me to either be into a movie or will absolutely have me kick out of a movie. And
interesting.
I looked, there's something about it. I'm just so mesmerized by, like, it helps me to tell the story and understand the environment. And I caught this moment and I was like, wait a minute, where are all the black people? There or anybody who's not white? And I started investigating. I was like, were there black folks? Were there Middle Eastern folks?
Okay, good. Because I was going to say, what's the reality of the picture?
Well, I mean, like, because otherwise, if we look at, like, what media has taught us, there has, if we believe what the linear timeline of black representation in British media, the first black person was Scary Spice in the 1990s. She was the first.
No, there was To Serve With Love. She was apparently the first. To Serve With Love was a British. No.
Because once Scary Spice entered to the scene, black people were then admitted into the UK, according to media.
According to James watching media. Because To Serve With Love is a British film from the 60s, which is I mean, granted, Sidney Poitier was American, but he was black in that British film.
So then, okay, so at least in the 60s. So then you're saying, so then Sidney Poitier came into the scene and then black people were allowed to be entered into here? The answer is, so I did some digging. I did some digging because I was curious, right?
Okay, yes.
And if you also think about this, also keep in mind, okay, the answer is going to be obvious if you really think about England and who they are. And as colonializers, think about this, right?
Okay, yes. You
don't just colonize something and they just, oh, we just keep it, we keep it fresh. We keep it white and fresh over here, right?
So stop it.
Let's think about this. So David Oley, how do you say his name? Martin Luther King? David Oyelowo?
Great actor.
A name I can't pronounce, and we know this is not my forte.
Should be awarded excellent actor.
Should be awarded best actor ever. He's amazing. He also
his last name.
Can't say his last name for shit. But he also has that new movie coming out with that, like, because he plays that prince of, like,
an African country with what's her face from Girl Gone. Gone Girl Wild.
So they have a great movie. Everyone should go check it out. That movie that we don't know that takes place about the African prince down in Africa. Happy Black History Month.
I saw the trailer once. It looked wild.
It looks great. But I also am like, well, why if it... It wasn't like, why was it not released so it could get some Oscar buzz? Is it like not good? Like what's happened?
You know why, James.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay.
But maybe it won a BAFTA.
Okay. So exactly. So David O, he said, so, and as you guys notice, there's a huge flock of like non-white British actors. They come over here. So what's the deal? So David O.
What is the deal?
David says, you know, because he's British and he's like, we make period dramas here, but there have almost never been black people in them, even though we've been on these shores for hundreds of years.
There we go.
That's right. Black folks have been in England for centuries, and it makes sense. Mm-hmm. England has been a colonizer for centuries. So, of course, and so it's like part of the problem is that, like, anytime you do these Downton Abbeys or you do, like, Anne of Green Gables. I don't know.
That's fucking blank. Canadian.
Well, we'll talk about that next week. Circle back to Anne.
We'll go up north.
But like just in general, like anytime you do these period dramas, it's like black people just don't ever exist until you get to like more modernist times.
I know, it's weird.
Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, David O, he said that he had this black historical piece that he tried to get made, but producers were like, you know, if it's not Austen or Dickens, people just won't understand it. So it appears that the UK has a very specific way of wanting to retell their histories and creating their narratives and their stories of who's involved. Because I'm just going to pose questions. Maybe it will remind people too much of their colonization if they have
other
races.
Of the terrors that they brought to other countries.
They just keep it white. They just keep it white.
Because
they
mean,
simplify their story and simplify their message.
My family was once British subjects. Jamaica was a part of England.
And then absolutely. They got- so
Yeah.
So where are those stories and their involvement? And correct me if I'm wrong, but then there was also, like, what year was it? They had a lot of Jamaicans were coming over to England for work.
Always.
So wouldn't it make sense that, like, if you're doing a period of World War II, and especially in London, which is going to be a metropolitan city, wouldn't you just have some extras, someone running around?
There's a lot of stories
that are not being told. So so then you have, because a lot of, you know, the UK likes to do these British, you know, period pieces. So there's a mass exodus of POCs leaving the UK, coming to the US.
Right?
Taking my jobs.
Stop it. Oh, I just wanted to point out that Jamaica was granted independence from the United Kingdom in 1962. So that is way, like, they got their independence a long time ago, meaning that they were a part of the United Kingdom for a while.
And so it would make sense for them to be involved in their period drama pieces.
Exactly.
So David talks specifically, and it's funny because he talks about Benedict Cumberbatch in this next piece, and I just watched this film about David.
Oh, he does.
Benedict. And he said the difference between myself and Benedict Cumberbatch and Eddie Redmayne is that they can choose to live here and still have a Hollywood career, because though they can do American movies, their bread and butter in Britain is period films. But he says, had I stayed here, I wouldn't be in Selma. That's just a fact.
That's so true, because, I mean, right now, Benedict Cumberbatch is huge because he plays Sherlock.
Right.
There's no black people. I mean, I guess it's a fictional character. I haven't watched the show.
But even that much more of a I haven't watched the show either. And, like, especially if it's a fictional piece, then all the more reason to be able to just then say, hey, we can put whoever we want in it. Right.
Exactly.
But then also, if it's a period piece, you can still put other people in it because those people did exist back then.
Exactly.
You know, and it just seems to be like, you know, Britain just has this addiction to corsets and cleavage, you know.
Oh, I do have to say,
glamorized ideas of these times.
It's so true. Mm-hmm. There was this one movie, and, you know, I don't know if it was an American movie or a British movie. It was about England, and it was with my girl Gugu. Once again. Mm-hmm. I can't say her name.
Gugu. Yeah.
She plays it's like during the 1700s. I think, because it's corsets and, you know, the big hoop skirts.
Yeah, and the big boobs.
She was basically, like, adopted into one of these royal families. And it's a true story.
Okay.
But that's,
so,
like,
they got one story under their belt.
One out of,
they,
like,
got one.
Thousands.
Good for you. And, you know, what doesn't help is that, you know, because if you watch these shows, you assume England was just white and has been white. And then you go there and you're like, and you learn the history. You're like, but wait. But what doesn't help is that the overseas receipts also just sort of help support that narrative and message, because people just, they tune in and we support it. You know, England, so, like, yeah, England has been a colonizer for centuries, so we know that. And, you know, these producers, they produce this narrow version of history with this middle to upper class of Caucasian men generally.
Right.
And it's like, but, you know, like, they've been all over the world. So where are those stories? So now let's look at the history of blacks in the UK television.
Ooh, can I just say one thing about a TV show that bums me out that people really like that they should fix?
Okay.
It's this show called Peaky Blinders.
Uh-huh.
And it takes place after World War I. So clearly people were in England of color.
Yes.
And they're all white and it's lower class. And the only time that they ever show anybody of color are, like, in stereo ass typical opium dens.
Okay. Well, that's visibility.
So it's like, come on. Let's, like, right. Even on a current show.
Yeah.
Like, true. What is going on?
But I do want to circle back into, like, the history of blacks on UK television. So this won't take long.
No, whatever.
Take your time. No, I literally mean this won't take long because not a lot.
No.
So I can't take that much time. So the first was on June of 1956, Mrs. Patterson, a BBC adaptation of a Broadway play starring Eartha Kitt.
Santa baby.
Got an American. They couldn't even get a British
actress. I was going to ask you. I was like, oh, I didn't know Eartha Kitt was British. She was not.
She's American.
Okay. Well, that happened. So then that was 1956. And then you had Channel 4 sitcom Desmond's, which brought...
Oh, I remember the Desmond's. Jasmine's.
Yes, it brought an African Caribbean barbershop in the Southeast London to Middle England's living rooms all across the country. And this was in the late 1980s to early 1990s. It had 71 episodes, about 5 million viewers on average. And this was a big deal for the UK, and it did really, really well. It also had a spinoff show, which I forget what the name of it is. So, but if you do you notice the jump? We went from 1956
That's huge.
To 1980s.
The 80s. Yeah. So a good 30 years before then, another black people were on TV. That's terrible.
And then the next one, and our final one, I told you this wasn't going to take long. April 2016, BBC One did a show called Undercover. So it's a new show, and it starred black actors Sophia Okeonedo. And,
yeah, she's a great actress.
And
I love her.
Adrienne Lester. And it's this, you know, continent hopping unfolding of a narrative about a man on death row in the U.S. With an all too believable tale of a metropolitan police officer who marries a woman he is meant to be keeping under surveillance. And so you're having these like, there's like powerful black images and figures. I think there's like, you know, one of them's a lawyer and like, and just things that like people just never really see. And on the UK televisions from British folks, they might see it if they tune in to see what Shonda is doing, right, over across the seas.
Yeah. So wait, so are you saying that these are shows that are starring black people?
Yes. I mean, black people have been in shows, sure, but there's not like been, and that to me is devastating. That these are the three shows.
It's a huge deficit. Like, right? One, Eartha Kitt, I looked it up, was born in Connecticut, so she American. Two. Then we got 30 years until we got another one.
Yeah.
And then the other one was in the 2000s. So we got to jump another 20 years before we get a centralized show around black people.
And this news show premiered to 5 million viewers. And maybe it was the same 5 million who turned into the Desmonds, because that one had 5 million viewers too. So there's still a demand for the same people who are still wanting this, you know.
They're still diversity. Alive. They're waiting.
They're waiting for this. So this writer from The Observer, Shatira Ramsaway, she pretty much said, in 2016, it's an outrage that it's a big deal to see a successful, affluent, complicated black family sit at a dinner table eating pasta. Especially when 9 million people in Britain describe themselves as non-white.
9 million?
Yeah. So not all of them tuned into this show. So I'm just saying, y'all, those ratings should be at least 9 million.
Should be up to 9 million. Come on.
And then the creator of Desmond, Trix Worrell, they had interviewed him recently, and he said that the thing that said among many blacks in the UK is that there will only be one black sitcom every 10 years.
They need to expand those years to 20 or 30, because...
Yeah, that's true.
Look at these receipts.
And then Idris Elba, which is a very interesting fact about Idris Elba. Idris Elba could not... His show, Luther, which is a British show, didn't come about until he had already started in The Wire over here in the U.S.
Right.
So he had to come to the U.S., get famous and big, and then they were like, oh, okay. And he's been urging British Parliament and MPs to take the matter seriously. He says, I love this quote, he says, Idris Elba, sexy man beast that you are.
Mm-hmm.
He says, although there's a lot of reality TV, TV hasn't caught up with reality.
Ooh. Look at that mind trip. I love it. And he probably said it in that British accent too. Well, of course he did.
He was like, TV hasn't caught up with reality.
Nope.
It's me.
Nope.
I'm sexy as Idris Elba.
He's not Oliver. Oh. He's not.
Do you mean I'm not ready to play Idris Elba's younger son? No, I don't want to play his son because I can't make out with him.
We're going to have to workshop that, James.
Okay. All right. Please tweet at Idris Elba. Let him be my acting coach. Yeah.
Yes.
We have to rehearse naked.
Oh. Okay.
Even in British journalism, there's not a lot of like, there's no current British chat show host that is a permanent anchor who's not white.
Wow.
So you even see there. There is also this other show I want to point out that's also, so it's not just the black shows that are not, it's not just like, black folks who are not, you know, being able to lead TV shows. Like, if black folks aren't doing it, then it's going to probably be even less for other minorities, you know? There is a comedy that's happening. I think right now it's in its fifth season. It's called Citizen Khan. It's by Adele Ray. It's on BBC One.
Uh-huh.
And it focuses on the escapades of an overbearing Muslim patriarch, Mr. Khan, and his family in the Spark Hill area of Birmingham. And it's a rare exception. Oh. It's been going on really well. And apparently it's been, you know, it's really cheeky and interesting.
Oh, okay, good. Oh, there's another show that's out on Netflix right now that was big on BBC that surrounds a black family. It's called Chewing Gum. It's hilarious.
Oh, yeah, I peeked into that one. So I guess like slow and steady and some change. So there are changes that are happening. Funny you should mention that.
It's happening, but slowly.
And there is another one that I had mentioned. I forget the name of it, but it's like they're vampire slayers, whatever, like demon hunters. I forget the name of it. One of them's black and one of them's white. I forget. Yeah.
And then
I've mentioned it on the show before.
Good too.
And Misfits is really good too. Has really good diversity there too. So there has been some changes that have been happening. The Royal Shakespeare Company casts Papa Isidu. This is just a lot of hard names today. As the lead actor in, I think they're doing Hamlet. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And it's the first time that it's the first time they've ever had a non-white Hamlet. And the Royal Shakespeare Company has been around for centuries, though. So it's like, applause, but like, it's about damn time.
Shakespeare built that. So
been around. This isn't like, okay, you're late to the party.
He wrote Othello, so clearly black people existed to them.
Exactly. People are aware. And then there's Noma D. She's playing Hermione in Harry Potter and the Cursed Child.
Yes, that's right, on the West End.
Yes, on the West End, hopefully. There's probably a lot of body roles involved. And in October, the BFI launched Black Star, a nationwide season celebrating black talent in film and TV.
Oh, okay.
I do want to break down some numbers for you, if I can, just behind the scenes. Since we are here across the pond, let's just expose it all.
Give me the facts.
Because as we all know, even here, like, it's all about who's got seats at the table. So just about 24% of those in senior roles in cable or satellite films are female. So just 24% on the lady front.
That's it?
Yes. 4% of employees in positions in senior broadcasts are BAME, and that is acronym that stands for British, Black, Asian, Minority, Ethnic. And it says, like, you know, if those numbers are to believe, there are no BAME people working at all on the senior production side of independent film companies. There's
none.
Yeah. And then the BBC statistics. So those are like at the higher ends. If we look at the BBC statistics, they're a little bit more encouraging. There are about BAME people make up about 13.4% of staff overall and hold about 9.2% of leadership positions.
9.2?
Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit better. A little bit better. So one of their parliament, and what's interesting is that their parliament gets like really involved. They're like, we need to fix this. And Chi Onuora, is the MP for Newcastle, has been very vocal. And Chi's been like, you know, the BBC, it's not doing enough. You got to step it up. You know, if you were doing your job, then there wouldn't be a problem. And she also said it was very interesting watching the European referendum, all the efforts the broadcasters had gone to make sure that there was balance. If they went to half the effort for BAME, gender and disability, it would be a different world. So the BBC has been trying to step it up the last year. They have a diversity and inclusion and succession group. And
that's good.
They have a goal by the year 2020 for their staff to have gender parity across every part of their corporations. They want 8% of their staff to be disabled, 8% of their staff to be lesbian and gay or trans, 15% of their staff to be BAME, which those numbers will be more closely representing the numbers of the country. So they want their company to look like the country.
That's beautiful. Go, BBC. So it's about damn time, but...
That's their goal. Yeah. So,
I'm glad they're putting work into it.
Because it's really important to be able to put the right work into it, you know? Because
you gotta reflect.
We've got all their actors are coming over here to get work because they can't get it over there. And I think some of it might be that the UK is sometimes uncomfortable about talking about issues around like racism.
Uncomfortable talking about anything over there.
Right, because it's very polite society. You just don't do it. But it doesn't bring attention to anything. Like, I think they had a funeral for the N-word, which is really cute, but it doesn't mean that everything is put to rest when you do that.
Right, no.
Yeah.
I mean, I like how you described it as cute, because that's exactly what it is.
It's cute. It's very, really appreciated. And, you know, those visual representations, as we know, they're really key and really important that, like, you know, I don't know, did Dennis Haysbert on 24 being president, did that help Barack Obama get elected? You know, it might have. Like, just people seeing visual images, it helps people get...
Wait, did that come before Obama?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It did. So, people need to see some shit before it happens. We need to see it. We need to get used to it because then the possibility is there.
Absolutely.
And if you're not allowing the possibility to happen in entertainment, then what makes you think that people will be able to accept it in reality?
Have it here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it reminds me of, like, I don't remember. Do you remember the movie Noah? Do you remember the movie Noah that came out with David?
Yeah,
Jared
with all
Aaron
the
Oscar?
White people in it. Yep.
And, you know, the one of the writers, he said, you know, he was like, from the beginning, we were concerned about casting the issue of race. He was like, what we realized is that the story is functioning at the level of myth. And as a mythical story, the race of individuals doesn't matter. They're supposed to be stand-ins for all people. Either you end up with Benetton or the crew of the Starship Enterprise.
What's wrong with Benetton or the crew of the Starship Enterprise? So basically what he's saying in that quote is being like the default
is white.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, and just because he didn't like, but then you have people with, it was like Australian accents and British accents and American accents all up in that. So that was distracting. So
it's just
clearly,
Western.
So you just really wanted just like white people in there. And like one thing that Star Trek is so great is that it shows the world of how it could be, where these like you have different people of different races and sexualities, like now sexualities. But like that was the idea, to be able to have these people from all across. So what's, like you said, what's wrong with that?
What's wrong with that? The way he's saying it, it's like it's a joke or it's disgusting, but I think it's beautiful. And one, like, that pisses me off. I don't know.
So
who did that?
Darren Aronofsky, yeah. So it's not like, so I wanted to kind of investigate because I feel like sometimes I know even myself, I could have rose colored glasses looking over at across the pond.
Okay.
And
I mean, I do too.
No,
I do.
But I wanted to just kind of do this expose because I kind of wanted to shine a dirty light onto the UK of like grass is not greener. So to all my POC and BAMEs over here, keep acting over here because the work is not any better
because
over there.
It's like,
at least we can have these conversations.
If British actors are coming over here for a better opportunity, we already have
it's
a shitty ass opportunity here. Like, what is going on?
As they come over here and take our jobs.
Stop
I'm just
it.
Saying. That was my role in Selma. You will not take my role as Cisco. That is one that I will be getting.
Also, I like how
you are
upset that you didn't get Martin Luther King in Selma. Like, the biggest role for a black person ever.
That was mine. I'm eyeing you. I will settle for my role. Not settle, but I will gladly accept my role as for Bayard Rustin in that movie. So that's going to be my
Oscar.
I
love it. You get that Oscar, and then I'll be right there on your coattails. Hey, can I come too?
Sure. Hold my trophies, though. They're heavy.
Sure. I'll bring a cart.
I got that many trophies? Yes!
I believe in you!
Aww. Think I'm ready.
Cover girl.
Work it out.
Stomp.
Is this about your...
Ooh.
Oh. She's
fashion.
Working it. She better work. She's a supermodel.
Fashion it out.
Work it on the runway. Don't fall. Keep your titties in.
Or out. You know, it could be risque fashion. You never know.
Because it's fashion. Oh, can I ask you, since you're the fashionista,
sure.
Is side butt really a thing?
Is what?
Is side butt really a thing?
No, it's not.
It's just your butt hanging out.
It's just your butt hanging out. That's somebody being lazy, being like, this is fashion.
It's just my
and
side
you
butt.
You just cover your
Everyone
butt.
Everyone just needs a little side butt. It's just your butt. Okay, got it.
You just need to cover your butt.
Yes, so, speaking of.
I feel like my corner nicely complements your corner.
Okay.
Because it's all about representation in media and entertainment in places that we need to see it so we can believe it when it's actually happening.
Very true.
And one of those things is fashion. Fashion has notoriously been, you know, not accepting of different sizes, different races, different looks.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll even say things like, oh, it's a trend to be this culture, which is like obnoxious and disgusting.
Absolutely.
So I want to, I read this article from Bustle, because
Bustle, Bustle.
Bustle knows how to work it out. It's by J. Loki Hall. And New York Fashion Week just happened, and that is where you go to get all the trends that are happening.
Oh, I know what it is, but you can explain it for the listeners.
Because you're in the middle of it. You're in New York. You're just.
I sat front row. I was there sitting next to Kim and Kanye.
And fake Cisco, Fisco.
Yeah. He stole my costume, so I had to take it off. They were like, you're not really Cisco. I was like, damn it.
Bitch,
like,
Cisco's stole already my look. Here.
Oh, bitch, stole my look. And then Cisco was also there. He was right behind me, and he was like, damn, I can't get in.
I know. Okay, so this season has been pretty good, actually, in terms of what normally walks down the runway. Like, there have been, I've done stories before, like, Marc Jacobs put dreadlocks on his models, and it was, like, a big deal. Like, there have been magazine shoots where models have been in blackface. There's been, like, cornrows. It is all over the place. It's literally, like, one of the last stops where people are, like, we're a progressive, but are really not. So.
Yeah, right. You know? They're, like, they're bordering the racist. They're teeter-tottering on that racism line. Or,
yeah, like,
too much.
If you think about, like, the 90s supermodels, and this is, like, Calvin Klein 90s, when everybody's supposed to be alternative or whatever. Literally, it is, of all the supermodels, it's only Naomi Campbell. Like, Tyra likes to say she was a big supermodel, but she was barely hanging on. Like, Naomi Campbell with, like, Claudia Schiffer and, you know, Chrissy Turlington and all of them.
In that case,
it's like,
that is,
you know,
you were saying some shit right there.
I'm
though.
Just saying.
I'm just saying. I know,
I mean,
but Tyra.
Tyra is. I love Tyra, and you know that
I
Tyra
know.
Is a big deal.
I know.
But she.
But I just never heard you. I mean, you're really going to bat for Naomi, because Naomi would agree with you. She
well,
would
of
agree with you.
She would.
And then she'd throw a shoe at me.
Yes.
For not agreeing sooner.
I mean, I'm going to say that Tyra Banks became a brand, and she did that well. Like, she had her TV show. She did America's Next Top Model. She did Swimsuit Illustrated.
She also brought, she also brought Naomi Campbell onto her show to talk about. Did you ever see that episode?
I did.
Okay. She brings
Naomi, but I'm just,
she brings Naomi onto the show, and she's like, we need to talk about this. You bullied me.
That's
on
why,
her show. That is so mean.
See?
What was Naomi supposed to do?
That is why Tyra is a brand. Everybody knows Tyra, and they think about her talking. A true model, professional,
ooh,
like a model.
Yes.
Like, I barely know what Naomi Campbell sounds like, but I know her face.
You're not watching Empire, then.
She can't act. Come on. She Tyra can act, kind of.
Tyra can act. You give that one to Tyra. Because Tyra was in that Lindsay Lohan Super Size Me model movie.
And she's been in, she was in Coyote Ugly. I don't know. She's just, Tyra is a personality.
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
She was a model, but Naomi Campbell in terms of, like, supermodels. And listen to this. You and I are talking about Naomi Campbell and Tyra Banks. Who else? Iman, maybe.
Oh, that's true. That's true. All right. The fact that we can count them.
Right.
You're right.
Representation. And that has been the problem that's been going on in the fashion industry. Ooh. Let alone, give me a top name of a Asian model.
Or a Latina model.
Exactly. You know, like, there's that one Jenny Shizu who, I'm saying her name wrong, but she dated Angelina Jolie. And that's literally, and Steve Aoki's sister.
And would you say, like, Giselle, isn't she, I mean, she's Brazilian, right?
She's Brazilian, but her last name is Buchen. She's German. I mean.
Oh, she's the German.
She's that
I mean,
fine
you know.
Line. And there's Adriana Lima. So there's a mix, but generally everybody looks like they have Caucasian features, you know?
Very true.
And remember, Alec Weck was a model who came out who looked African, but was a big deal, you know? So the fashion industry is afraid to take risks from time to time, even though they try and say that they're super daring and risk-taking.
Right. They're not.
So generally, it's been like such a non-diverse runway show, but this season, the spring-summer 2017 collection shows, one quarter of the models were people of color. I'm not that impressed with that, but I'll take it. So a quarter of the models were people of color. And then the highest percentage of the four major fashion capitals. So New York Fashion Week was the most diverse out of Paris, London. I don't know what the third one is.
I hope it's not Milan, because it should not.
Oh, yeah, Milan.
I've been to Milan, and it should. You do not deserve that title anymore. I will. I'm going to leave it alone, but I'll tell you this, not impressed, Milan. Holding on to the 80s, that title should be released. But continue, I'm sorry.
So,
just not impressed.
Aside from Milan, we're not talking about them.
Yeah.
We're talking about US of A. While the designers are getting better at including people of color, I guess baby steps, they are terrible at everybody else. They did less than 1% of runway models were trans. There was no disabled models, barely any plus sized models, actually zero disabled models, and less than 1% plus size models.
So there's like one running around.
Basically, just doing all the shows.
Okay. Fair enough.
So I want to highlight not your Karl Lagerfelds or your Chanels. I want to talk about some designers that are actually utilizing the rich fabric that our country provides.
Mm.
So the first one I want to talk about is Smart Glamour. So Smart Glamour, they cast disabled models and a service dog.
Ooh, dog's got that fashion too.
Mm-hmm. I'm seeing this picture of this dog named Corey who's being all cute next to her owner.
Aneke is sold.
I'm into it. So also, Anna Ono. So Anna Ono did hashtag Cancerland was the name of the show. Okay. And so Anna Ono is basically a lingerie line, which is very exposing and open, obviously, because it's underwear. It's your panties.
Mm. Yeah.
Your underoos, your drawers.
It's your lady parts.
It's your thongs, as you would say.
As this goes down in the front row, he's like, I wrote a song about that.
Anna Ona specializes in producing bras for women and people, basically, who have had mastectomies. So mastectomy means breast removal. So they featured 16 breast cancer survivors, patients, and previsors. So those are basically people that are predisposed to breast cancer. So they had a partnership with a New York nonprofit called hashtag Cancerland. And they allowed their models to display their scars as a way of saying, like, just we're saving people, we're being human, this is just natural, be yourselves and love yourself.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And so Naeem Khan, my fucking, if you haven't had a chance, Naeem Khan, N-A-E-E-M-K-H-A-N, beautiful. Like, I was looking at wedding gowns when I was looking at gowns, and I can't afford this shit, but it's the most beautiful fucking ornate, gorgeous stuff, period. So yeah. I was surprised to see that this designer was listed on here. So Naeem Khan is Indian American, and Michelle Obama wears this shit all the time.
You had me at Michelle Obama at MO.
Naeem Khan closed his motherfucking show with a black model walking down the runway in a glittery golden gown set to the readings of Maya Angelou's poem, Human Family. And they said that the crowd was moved to tears. It was so beautiful.
I'm sure. I'm getting chills just thinking about it. And it's so interesting because it's like if fashion is art, it's like, it's interesting. I've never really thought about it. Like, why doesn't the fashion industry push the boundaries and the political boundaries like more often and do things that are just way more interesting instead of really, it's really like you said, they say they're edgy, but they're not. They just kind of put they put a lampshade on a woman and make her walk down with a bra and a rollerblade. And they're like, she's edgy. And she's like a size zero.
It's the same as,
she's like a size zero, lampshade on her head, covered in paint, a bra, wearing a rollerblade and a roller skate, holding a broom, and they're like, she's edgy, and she's like, a size zero.
No, she's not. Like, this is fucking edgy. Like, I am in love. And just the fact that, a lot of times radical things are done by fashion houses that aren't that known, but the fact that Naeem Khan is doing this, and this is a huge, out-of-control, great show.
Yeah.
So, the next one, Christian Siriano, who was on Project Runway.
I was like, that name sounds familiar. I don't know why I got like, ooh, like, I know him. I don't know him.
Yeah, you know Christian Siriano. He won Well, maybe. I don't know.
Did he win? I don't know if he won.
He won. He won Project Runway. He also is now a judge on Project Runway's Junior, which I highly recommend. At first, I didn't want to watch it because I was like, who gives a fuck about these, like, whatever, children? But these are the most delightful teenagers I've ever seen in my life. They are so cute. They, like, design really bomb-ass amazing things. It really makes you have hope for the future because of these baby children that are just, like, on their shit.
Okay, yeah.
So, anyways, Christian Siriano. I love him because before all the shit that went down with our girl Leslie Jones on Twitter, mm-hmm. So no designers would design a dress for her because of her size for the opening of Ghostbusters.
That's
and
insane.
She posted it on Twitter and was like, nobody wants to design for me. Kristen Siriano was like, I got you on Twitter.
Yes.
And then he designed a bomb ass dress for her and it was beautiful.
Oh my God. Can you post the pictures of it on the Facebook group?
Oh yeah, I'll do that. I need to do that. So going in line with what he did, that's separate. They didn't even talk about that. He, nearly one-fifth of his models this season were plus size, sizes 10 to 53. That's double the amount of plus-size models he hired last year. And then also, he, like, made a point to diversify his models. And so the fact that he's doing plus-size and diversity on the runway is huge.
And I also would like to point out about plus size model, because I've been in the model. My mom is a former plus size model. Mm-hmm. And I've been to those fashion shows and stuff. And like, they should really just call, like, they're just like women. Like, you
regular.
Know, like, they're like regular size women. And I don't mean like regular, like they're frumpy dumpy. They're just like,
no.
They're just regular size women. Who, you know, like,
because
the model size
typical
is like,
the best
it's
word.
Incredibly, really, really skinny, like incredibly slender mm-hmm. or slender, you know?
It's out of control. Okay,
so that
is like good insight because it's so true. To be like a size 1 or 0 is not the norm.
Yeah.
Okay, so Prabal Gurungic, I'm totally probably fucking that name up, is Nepalese American, designed his entire fall 2017 collection to be feminist.
Whoa.
There were shirts that said our minds, our body, our power. It was basically unabashed and unapologetic definition of femininity. So he just made that whole statement on his clothing.
That's awesome. I have a question for you, and
yes.
Maybe you'll get to this, and I don't want to spill the beans or spoil the pooch.
Okay.
I also hate the phrase "screw the pooch" because that's disgusting. Why are you doing that? But are there designers who are women who are on here who are doing feminist?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the first one. The first two were women designers.
Okay.
And then Naeem and Siriano are men.
Right. Okay.
So yeah, women.
Because
I'm just butchering
like,
their names right now.
Oh, which they're making them sound very masculine. You're like Manny McManderson.
Come
I'm just
on.
You're not. But and I just, yeah. Because like I also just think too, like I'm glad because sometimes like I've had this preconception of this idea of like, mm-hmm. sometimes like I feel like the fashion industry can also be very dominated by men, which I think is weird. And you know, like men also being like,
yeah.
And not like men can't be involved, but when they're always in the driver's seat of like, you're going to wear this, ladies. And, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, just to speak to what you're saying, the next one is a woman designer.
Good thing I asked about it.
Yeah.
Asking you shall receive.
Inicia Halzibaum's models were all immigrants.
Ooh.
So Inicia Halzibaum is an Indonesian and Muslim designer. And so she made headlines last New York Fashion Week because she was the first designer to present a New York Fashion Week collection that included hijabs.
Oh, nice.
And so for her fall 2017 collection also featured hijabs, but also all the women wearing them were immigrants or second generation children of immigrants.
Wow.
So she said that this show was the opportunity to show that Islam is beautiful. I believe everyone should be presented with equal opportunities, especially if he or she has passions, talents, and skills, because not all immigrants are bad. We've proven that they are beautiful and a great contribution to the states.
This is great. I've never been interested in Fashion Week before until you've said all of these amazing designers. Like,
okay.
I don't care about seeing, you know, Calvin Klein and his, like, underwear white boys walking around, or, like, you know, Whiter McWhiterson designer and his woman in a lampshade. I'm not interested. I don't care. It doesn't mean anything to me. It's just boring. And it's just a bunch of, like, you know, white ladies stomping around. This sounds fascinating. Walking around in that Paris Hilton horse stomp. And you know what I'm talking about.
Of course I do.
I'm not interested in seeing it. But this sounds interesting.
Cool.
Can I still get tickets?
It's over. I'm sorry. But maybe next one.
I'm like, oh, I better go right now.
Okay, here's the last one. The last one is Mara Hoffman. She designed her whole collection for the New York Fashion Week to include women who participated in the Women's March and the co-chairs of the Women's March to come and speak at the fashion show.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
what were they wearing? Were they wearing pussy hats?
No, there's this one woman wearing a velvet dress and a shirt that says "Love is the Resistance." And it's a black woman.
I'm not going to lie. Having been to the Women's March, what I pictured was just a lot of people.
Yeah,
just
it's
like,
not parkas and fuzzy pink hats.
And people, I literally imagine like hundreds of women walking up and down the stage with their protest signs and pussy hats.
This is a fashion show, James.
I don't know. Maybe that. Aneke, I think I need to challenge you on what your perceptions and ideas of fashion are. Open your mind, Aneke. Parkas can be sexy.
You know what I just realized from doing this one segment? Yeah. I've always known that you've never really given a shit about fashion.
Is that because of the way I dress?
Nice. Okay. No, let me clear that up. You dress nice and you know how to present yourself properly, but if I were to be like, does this shirt look cute or whatever, you'd be like, I don't know. I need to see it on me.
I would love, and then I would know. That's actually very true. Disclaimer, like, I've had a handful of ladies be like, let's go shopping. I'm like, okay.
I don't want to do that. I know. I don't
because
ask you to do
that. I will pick you out and then you'll wish you had never asked, because I will find the most ugliest and ridiculous things and ask you to try them on for my pure entertainment. So that's what you're getting. That's what you're getting.
Do I know my friend James or what? So, okay. I knew that. But the thing that I didn't realize is how much fashion I know.
Yeah, as you were doing this segment, I thought the same thing. I was like, this segment makes sense. Aneke is a fashionista. You are.
Not
you
really,
were like,
though.
But you are.
I'm sitting here in a sweatshirt and a head wrap.
Yeah, because you're not stomping down the runway yet.
It's true.
But
I'm
tomorrow
not
morning,
anywhere.
She busts out the door and she goes, hello, world. Play my track. Stomp, 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 stomp.
It's
I'm
so
working
true.
The runway. Working the runway. Fresh off the runway. Rihanna wrote her song Fresh Off the Runway after watching you go to work.
She did. She was driving in her car and she just saw me stomping down San Rafael streets.
And she was like, wait a minute. She's so fresh off the runway.
Bitch?
She's fresh off the runway. And then that song came out of
it. It's true.
A star was born. You are a fashionista star.
We both were born during this episode. This is called Origin Stories.
Stars are born. Two stars are born. That's it. Welcome. You heard it, listeners. This was the moment.
But you know what? I want to invite...
Where am I going?
Fashion industry to...
Your house?
Come and use... No, to use their platform to speak about diversity, to speak about inclusion, to speak about all of these different things that are clearly being left out in a community that prides itself on being different and innovative. We need to start inviting that. Teen Vogue is doing it. They are doing some hot shit right now.
If the teens can do it, y'all can do it too. Old Vogue.
It's so true.
Old Vogue, you can learn some new tricks. But Aneke, I would like to second, first of all, I'm going to accept your invitation on behalf of the fashion industry since I live in New York. Mm. And I'm a stone's throw. I was late. I missed it.
You missed it. You walked past this several times.
I probably
did.
Like,
what's going on over
there?
What is
all these tents? I ain't got time
for
this. I have an audition. But you're right. And it also reminded me, like, you really brought awareness, attention to me because, again, like, you know, it should be pushing the envelope instead of just really delivering the status quo. And also, because you're an industry that is also saying what is beautiful too.
Right.
You actually,
exactly.
You have a, actually, I'm going to put it even further. I'm not going to invite. I'm going to say you have a responsibility.
Ooh.
I'm actually going to call you out, fashion
That's
industry.
Good.
You have a responsibility to do better and to do more just because of just like, you know, representation is so key and so important. You know, like, you know, the, just like the, I was thinking about, you know, just like, you know, the eating disorders that young girls are put through and things like that. Like, those are very serious things. You know,
they are, and
I'm not saying that you are to cause for it, but you have an opportunity to have a better healing and helping hand.
Oh, into my God. So true.
A lot of what we're doing. You know, if you are art and what is beautiful, like, step it up, fashion industry.
Right.
There's designers who are doing it.
Yeah. Stop being so closed minded about beauty. Beauty can be found anywhere, all over the world, in different ways and forms. Start embracing it.
Ooh, can I? I have one.
Oh, yeah.
Fashion industry, stop being so last season.
Ooh. That thong, the thong, thong, thong.
Hello, and welcome to Podphone. What type of podcast are you looking for?
You have chosen funny podcasts about bad movies.
Rated R. May we recommend The Flophouse?
Three friends talk about bad movies and make each other and you laugh.
Rated R. The Flophouse is playing at your ears.
If you download it right now or whenever.
Rated R. To purchase tickets to The Flophouse, you don't need to do that, just download it. The Flophouse, rated R for nudity, I guess.
A star was born. It's Aneke and James.
The two of us.
The biggest stars in the universe. Self-proclaimed.
Oh, getting ahead of ourselves a little bit.
They gotta have dreams. Oh. Well, because I was so inspired by Mimi. Can I read this Mariah Carey quote that I thought was hilarious? So Mariah talking about New Year's Eve, right? Because, of course.
She needs to put that to rest. Not. We're not even thinking about this
anymore. Because I
had,
like, let it go and just sort of, like, but
I don't even care. I'm like, Mariah, you're still Mariah to me.
She has this dope quote because she's like, it's just something where if I can't explain to the entire world, and they're not going to understand it because it's not what they do. Just like, I wouldn't understand somebody who had a desk job and how they do that. I literally am incapable of being in the real world and surviving.
Never change, Mariah Carey. Never change
that quote, because it's kind of shady to everybody else.
It is like, y'all basics need to leave me alone in my extra fabulous life. I'm trying to entertain you.
You can't.
So you don't have to think about your fucking desk job that I have no idea about.
Which I don't know how that works. Do you sit at a desk? Is there a pencil involved? I don't know.
Anybody with a brain will know how a desk job works.
You could not explain your desk job to Mariah Carey. She would not understand
how
it. She wouldn't want you to explain it to her because she knows that she couldn't understand all the intricacies of, like, how your boring ass desk job works.
You know what, though?
So, all right, Mariah.
She probably doesn't know how to work a computer. I'm just going to put that out there.
She can't order her own Domino's pizza, so I got it.
She has somebody wheel her around in a desk chair. her gig.
Because she doesn't know how that desk chair works, because she wouldn't understand how that
works.
She
just sits in it and goes, what now?
What happens next? How does this... Is this a door, you say? I'm
is
not
this
sure.
A ride?
Is this a knob? Please, don't explain it to me, because I won't understand your common ways. She just called everybody a basic, is what she did.
She did!
Mariah, shame.
I love you.
God. So, don't ever change.
Don't.
So, we are coming up on a few things, Corner Kids. We have the Max Fun Drive is coming up, I think, next month.
Max Fun Drive is coming up in March.
This is our first one, and we're going to be doing a super bonus episode for just people who either donate or subscribe. I think it's like $5
donors
to subscribe.
Donors, donate your money to us.
And I think it's like $5 to subscribe. And, like, it goes to things like helping this beautiful podcast to survive. Helps us to get, you know, new equipment, and also just, you know, a lot of work goes into this. And case in point, last week, James had to re-record. Oh my God, I'm like Mariah Carey. I'm talking about myself.
I know you're talking about yourself in third person.
A Star Is Born. James here.
You.
former member of Nine on Time, the talent show band of 1994.
Pretty. Hurts.
That's just, it's my theme. It just plays into my head all the time. Pretty Hurts. Mm-hmm. And podcasting hurts sometimes too. I had to re-record all of my audio because the mics were all fucked up. So like,
just, did you guys just notice how good of an actor he is?
Time, that effort, is some good and energy acting. And this is not the first time I've had to go and do it. So if
it is not,
if the episode was weird, don't. I mean, I did what I could.
Also, I'd like to point out that I'm sure you guys have noticed, and I'm sure you guys appreciate the fact that we don't have any commercials, but that means we're not getting paid.
Yeah, so this big drive is going to be really helpful for us to be able to continue delivering what you love, hopefully, and just, you know, and I think it's like $5 to be a sponsor, to like, to be a, no, to get a, to do a, what is it? To get a, to be a fan of
Maximum
Fun. To
donate some money, to be a donor.
$5, that's like nothing. For a whole entire year? Come on. Come on.
Yeah, so that's coming up. But before that, we want to get some input on what type of bonus content.
Yes. We would love some feedback. You can either email us at minoritycorner@gmail.com what you would want. I would love to do a like in-depth secret show where you guys could really ask us like in-depth questions, things about like how we met. Things about like our personal lives that you've been curious about. Anything. Or like maybe just like personal like opinions. Maybe you want to hear you know, our different personal experiences with different things or thoughts or insights. And you can really sort of get to know us. It's like, it's really an episode for the fans. We really want to, you know, dive deep. So we want this episode to be what you want it to be. So send us ideas, input and insights. That's coming up. We want to prepare.
Yeah, we really want to make sure that this is like fan listener driven. Because if we left it up to our own devices, we'd just be singing Mariah Carey and Janet Jackson songs the whole time.
I was literally going to say the same thing. I was going to say Mariah Carey songs, Janet Jackson interludes. So, we're already on the same page. Apparently, we've already brainstormed about it. So, this is what's happening unless you stop the train.
We had a mind meld coming for a second.
It's a coming. That star is about to be born.
Yes.
You can follow us on the Twitters. You can get us on the Facebooks. You can
people
get us.
Have been following us on Minority Corner with a K on Twitter.
Yeah, it's great stuff that's happening there. So join the conversation.
Yeah, I'm super excited. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. If you are a longtime listener, we love you. If you're somewhere in between, keep on listening. We love you.
Also, it's been a long time since we've gotten a voice memo, so please email your voice messages.
Ask Minority Corner anything.
But if you want to save it for the bonus, I know we've got a lot of requests.
Just asking you for everything. Can I have a ride? Can you pick me up?
I might be in your town soon, so you could pick me up and get me a pizza. I don't know how this works. I'm a star now, so I don't know. Your simple ways, I don't understand how they
work.
You
got to figure out better demands than that, James, if you're a star now. All you want is a pizza and a ride?
Really, secretly, my needs are simple. So
you're easy.
I want a pizza and a ride. I guess I'll have to step it up. Can I get a disco ball?
All right, we're getting a little more extravagant.
Time.
Still could get it out
a little more
store,
crazy,
but you
getting
know.
On the Kanye levels. I need a disco ball around me at all times so I can feel fabulous.
Okay, we've reached it. We've reached the point. We've reached
I need a ride, a pizza, and a disco ball. Well, on that note, a star is born, y'all. Happy 69 episode.
Yay.
In honor of it, everybody go 69.
And if you don't have somebody to 69, it's okay.
That's okay. That's all right.
You can go get a pizza.
Join the club. Go get a t-shirt and just write six. Just listen to the 69 boys and then you celebrate it.
And
so
then picture James fronting. What was the name of that band again?
Nine on Time. Yeah. There were nine of us. And I will let you know this. My dad is the one that came up with the name. He was my Daddy Knowles. Like I had my
Matthew
Tina
Knowles.
I had my, it was a full family affair.
How
I was their Beyonce.
How are you not Beyonce right now?
No, my parents got busy with work and real jobs.
Why didn't I think that there would be nine? Nine is a lot.
There was a lot. We were not all going to make it to the, but Girls Time, Beyonce's original band, also had like nine of them in
there. That's true.
So not all the girls made it to the cut to Destiny's Child.
Goddamn down.
Kelly was the only one to survive that one.
Barely, and she barely survived that shit. Because what's Kelly doing now?
He's thinking about being a survivor. Yeah. Okay. Well, anyways, on that shady ass note, have a great week, y'all.
Bye, everybody.
Your star is born, too.
It's okay. You know, mine is fine. Just tagging along.
I meant the listeners. I was inspiring the listeners.
Well, then I take it back. Everybody's star is born.
Have you seen Happy Valley yet?
How do British people pronounce Edinburgh, Leicester, or Norwich?
Not like that.
Are you tired of getting your world news from reliable sources, often with no puns or sexual innuendo?
Why was there a butcher's hat haunting Coronation Street?
What's Coronation Street, and why is Dave Holmes obsessed with it?
International Waters pairs a team of comedians in LA against a team of comedians in London in a pop culture battle royale. Join us once a fortnight to hear the best comedians in the world trade jokes and stories and maybe even learn something at the same time. International Waters with me, Dave Holmes. Find it at MaximumFun.org or wherever you download podcasts.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.
It's beautiful.
And all that jazz.